Are either one of these any good?
Wow, this is a good movie.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, well, the director from yesterday doesn't think so.
It stinks.
You're sorry. You waste all our film.
It's so bad.
Two big releases in the theaters this weekend and some smaller movies too, theaters and streaming, to talk about. And we'll do it. Welcome in. This is the Screening Room Podcast, and she is Hope Madden.
He's George Wolf.
And we are from MadWolf.com. And let's start out with the feature directing debut for Dev Patel. An anonymous young man unleashes a campaign of vengeance against the corrupt leaders who murdered his mother and continue to systematically victimize the poor and powerless. It's Monkey Man.
You need to fight for your mother, for all of us.
Anger will not quiet your soul, my son.
Don't call me son.
It's time to remember who you are.
But only love kills more when will they learn.
Just one small ember can burn down everything.
Let him mock you.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for a fight?
1, 2, 3.
Yeah, Dev Patel before this only directed two shorts. And man, he jumps into features, both fists.
Yes.
Fists flying. This is exciting. Really, it heralds the arrival of a new hero and a new exciting filmmaker, because
yes,
this delivers the goods. And it's Dev Patel plays the anonymous young man. He kind of goes by the name Bobby. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of a joke there, which we won't spoil. But in the beginning, he says that his name is Bobby, so we can refer to him as Bobby. But anyway, technically, yeah, he is anonymous. But he is in India, and he's poor, and he finagles his way, kind of cons his way into a job with this woman named Queenie, who runs this very exclusive club for the high, high rollers. And he's got eyes and a plan to be promoted quickly so he can be a server in the VIP room where the real high rollers are, and when there's some, you know, bad and illegal stuff going on. It's all part of his plan to get to, you know, the old head of the snake type of premise that we've seen before, because he's got a plan for vengeance, as it said in the synopsis there. They've been working on a years-long plan for vengeance against this man who murdered his mother and then has been, as the synopsis says, part of a group that is oppressing the poor and the powerless in India. So he's got that plan to assassinate the guy who's basically, he's the chief of police in the town. And things go awry the first time he takes a shot at it. So before you know it, he's badly injured and he's very wanted all over. And then things take a different turn because he gets help from a, let's say, mysterious man. And he sort of then becomes, I don't want to give away too much, but then he becomes a better version of himself. I mean, he was already a good fighter, because when we meet him, he's doing this underground fighting. He wears a monkey mask. And lots of times, even though he's a good fighter, he takes dives for money for a guy named Tiger. Charlton Copley plays the guy who runs the fighting ring. So he can already fight. But once he gets healed, so to speak, he comes out as a better version of himself. And now he can really kick some ass. And he not only goes after his continued plan for vengeance, but he becomes sort of a savior figure, a leader figure for these people, the oppressed peoples, the forgotten peoples, the minorities, and the ones who are social outcasts for the people at the top. And it's a very progressive type hero, and a progressive worldview for this movie. And you can feel Patel's passion all over it, not only for the story and the way it's structured and the way it's put together, but also for the worldview of the hero and of the movie. And that is impressive as well, because the premise is familiar, right? The head of the snake sort of thing. And it knows that, because the movie even name checks John Wick early on.
Yeah.
And it'll remind you of a handful of other films, but it feels more like inspiration than theft. You know, it just seems like Patel has a certain number of films that have clearly, I think, and filmmakers who have inspired him as a filmmaker.
Very much so. You'll think of John Wick, of course. You'll think of some of the old martial arts masters, Bruce Lee and others. You'll see bits of Nicholas Winding Refn in there with maybe some drive and Only God Forgives. Tarantino, of course, when you say Tarantino, the movie you're most going to think of, in fact, one scene in particular, out of Kill Bill. But then, of course, Tarantino was homaging some of his inspirations as well. So it's sort of inspiration through inspiration. But yeah, you'll see all that. And it's not like he's trying to run from it. Patel doesn't. But gives it a very, you know, very his new type of stamp, you know. And it doesn't seem like thievery. It seems like homage and the fact that he can put together these great action scenes.
Yes.
I mean, he loves close-ups. He loves quick cuts. Also, then he'll throw in these point of view shots, and man, it moves. It moves. He's also got some really good fight choreography, and it's extremely exciting. It's also extremely bloody. This is not a family. This is not family entertainment at all. This is bloody and it's grim. But man, it delivers the goods. Now, I will say, just because, and this is not to denigrate the film, but I mean, I've seen a couple of quotes that this is the best action film in 10 years. You know, it's not John Wick 4. I mean,
that's
a pretty high bar. But
it's great.
It's really, really good. It's really, really good. And just a pure adrenaline-type action film with a social conscience and something on its mind at the same time, delivering just some flat out action thrills. It really brings it. It really brings it. There's a couple of times where you think, okay, he's going a little bit overboard, a little too preachy right here, but just at the precipice there, pulls back. So it's really impressive. And it's 2 hours, but it moves. There isn't anything at the end. I thought that maybe there might be because
it feels like an origin story.
It does. A lot of times, or a couple of times anyway, it feels a lot like Batman Begins. Mm-hmm. You know, when he gets hurt and then healed, that sort of thing, and has to come back better than he was.
It'd be fun if it was an origin story, honestly.
It really feels like
there are not that many times where I think I could watch sequels to this, but I could watch sequels to Monkey Man.
Yeah, definitely so. It does feel like an origin story and a start, not only for a hero, but for a filmmaker, because I'll tell you what, this delivers it. And if he can arrange this sort of action, you know, maybe he'll stay in this genre, maybe not. But I'm interested to see what he put together. He's also credited as he gets a story credit along with screenwriters Paul Aguinella, I think, and John Colley. And then, of course, you may have seen Jordan Peele as a producer. His Monkey Paw Productions is all over this. So this is another good one. We didn't even mention the performance of Dev Patel.
Right.
Very commanding, very charismatic. You know, he brings that, too, as the, I don't want to say reluctant, but he doesn't set out to be a leader of people in the beginning. He's got his own mission that he's trying to carry out. And then he puts this population on his back and moves forward, and they have his back. And it really is satisfying. So, big recommendation for this new hero and this new filmmaker, Dev Patel in Monkey Man, in the theaters now. The other big one in theaters this weekend, a young American woman is sent to Rome to begin a life of service to the church, but encounters a darkness that causes her to question her faith and uncovers a terrifying conspiracy that hopes to bring about the birth of evil incarnate. This is The First Omen.
20th Century Studios presents...
Bad things will start to happen. Evil things.
A film of psychological suspense about an occurrence of earth-shaking importance.
It's all for you.
You must be very careful. They believe they can burst the Antichrist.
The First Omen.
Who wishes to be the mother?
Don't be afraid.
Your mother.
He chose you.
Your mother.
Margaret.
If this is the truth, where does it end? The First Omen.
Are you sure, George? Are you sure that isn't exactly the synopsis for
Boy, it sounds
Immaculate?
Really familiar. And that was just two weeks ago.
Just 2 weeks ago, yeah. I mean, it's startling the similarities in plot, right down to she hasn't taken her vows yet, and she's an American who was brought up in orphanages, and she's moved to rural Italy so that she can take her vow. I mean, it's...
And she also has, like, the sassy best friend.
She does. Who you think to yourself, you're a nun? Really? It's
very similar, and this is director and co-writer Arkasha Stevenson, who I know you saw, and I saw a little bit of Brand New Cherry Flavor a couple of years ago. But the timing of it is really unfortunate, because anybody that saw Immaculate, I think this comes up, it comes up wanting. I mean, it comes up as it pulls punches that Immaculate did not.
No, yeah, I think you're exactly correct. And you know, I wonder to myself if I would have liked this film if I'd seen it before I saw Immaculate, because... I think that, Stevenson's hands are tied to a certain degree. This is a direct prequel to the 76, The Omen, the 76 original.
You reminded me has had how many sequels?
So it's had four, including this one, and a reboot.
Wow. I didn't know it had four sequels. Yeah. So this is the prequel, right?
Yeah. She's limited. It's not like it's bad territory to mine, to be honest with you, because there was so much that was sort of left ambiguous, but they dug up the jackals, you know what I mean? And we know that there was a fire and there was some sort of a conspiracy. The problem is just that it does everything Immaculate did, and it doesn't do it as well. It's got a 70s look about it, and it does accomplish that. Of course, Immaculate was gorgeous. It was beautifully filmed. It was gorgeous. It had that big, lush, Italian cinematic flavor to it, so it looked better.
That trailer that we just heard, that was a specific 70s type trailer they came out with, which I kind of appreciated. Yeah. I thought, all right, I like that.
Yeah, and I think that the lead performance is decent. I think they do a few things at the convent that I like. They don't vilify all of the nuns, right? As human beings, they play with the kids in the orphanage. They dance around a little bit. You know what I mean? There are moments. And the performances are fine. And it's got Bill Nighy is in it.
Yeah, the cast.
He's always good. Ralph Ineson.
I mean, the lead is Nell Tiger Free plays Margaret. But yeah, you look at the cast and you've got...
Antonio Braga.
Yeah, Charles Dance, Bill Nighy, and then, of course, Ralph Ineson.
Yeah, that voice.
With that voice.
He plays Father Brennan.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And as soon as he starts speaking, I mean, oh, that guy from The Witch
from
and
the
Game
Witch.
Of Thrones
yeah,
and all
yeah,
those
yeah.
things. Yeah.
And it looks fine. You know, it's a well-put-together movie, but... It soft pedals the sort of anger against the Catholic Church. It sets up right away. There's a good church, and then there's the power hungry church. There are two things about Immaculate that I much preferred. One is that it's just angry with the Catholic Church. It's just angry, and the whole it doesn't have to soft pedal that what it's angry about is the way the Catholic Church and all organized religions. Assume power over a woman's individual bodily rights.
Right.
And it pulls no punches. Immaculate pulls no punches. You're going to go, oh, wow, they are going there. And man, that makes this movie feel like a lot of pulled punches. You know, it's not as angry, a bit more forgiving of Catholicism than probably given the storyline it ought to be.
Now, as we were talking just at lunch here before we started taping this, if you're going to have a direct prequel to The Omen, your hands are tied in uncertain aspects about what you can and can't do. But even so, there's still punches that are pulled.
To be honest with you, is that a bad film?
No.
Is that a badly put? It's not a great film either. It's not like one of those ones where I think, oh, it's just such a shame that a far better film came out 2 weeks ago. Because, you know, if you like The Omen movies, I think you're going to be fine with it. I don't think it's going to be scary to you. I think you'll probably appreciate some of the ways that that the filmmaker connects it to the source, you know, the original film. But it's nothing great.
And it is rated R.
It is rated R.
Yeah.
But if you haven't seen Immaculate and you want something that really does take a bite, like a big old bite, I would recommend you see that one instead.
Yeah, yeah. And that is The First Omen, out now on the big screen, all the theaters. Let's lighten it up with a comedy next, when people in Littlehampton, including conservative local Edith, begin to receive letters full of hilarious profanities. Rowdy Irish migrant Rose is charged with the crime. Suspecting that something is amiss, the town's women investigate. It's called Wicked Little Letters.
The mystery of the obscene Littlehampton letter is causing widespread distress across the nation.
heavens. Carry on.
Dear Eve, you foxy ass old whore.
In the end, I think it's just jealousy.
Do you feel certain Rose Gooding's guilty?
I can't see why they think it's me.
Rose Gooding, who allegedly harassed a pretty young Christian woman.
What's the evidence?
Larry, you wanker!
Similarities in the language.
I think you've been set up, Rose. Is there anyone who'd want to do such a thing?
You got a pen and paper?
I like you, Rose, and I'd like to bring you to the light.
Why would I send a letter when I can just say it?
I noticed they say foxy ass a lot. Nobody swears like that.
What would you say?
You look like Queen Victoria shoved a purple.
You daft old...
This is a nice movie that is incredibly elevated by a cast. Man, what a cast.
Yeah, great cast, especially the two leads. Other than that, this seems like something that probably should have been a streamer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's out there in the theaters. But you've got, at the top of the cast, you've got Olivia Colman, Oscar winner, just great in everything.
Every single thing.
I mean, I think she elevates everything.
Yes, I agree.
But she plays Edith in this small town in England, Littlehampton, and set in the 1920s.
And it's based on a true story.
Based on a true story. At the beginning, it says, this is more true than you would think. This is an interesting way to say, based on true events. But yeah, long before you could hide behind your keyboard and your avatar, there was some trolling going on in 1920s Littlehampton, as Edith, who is a... She's an adult, obviously, Olivia Colman, and she's unmarried, and she still lives at home with her parents, including her domineering father, played by, again, the great Timothy Spall. Yeah. So, and she's known throughout the town as a dutiful daughter and a devout Christian. And she starts getting these vile letters full of profanity and vitriol and hate. And who could be doing this? Well, everybody bets it's that vulgar Rose Gooding.
Yep.
The Irish woman down the street.
Always drunk and always cursing.
Always drunk and loud. And she's got a kid already. And she says she's a war widow. But is she really? And she's got a live-in boyfriend. It must be her. So really, that's enough for the town constables. They arrest her and they schedule a show trial. But there's this one constable who has to be referred to as woman police officer who doesn't quite agree, and she is played by Anjana Vasan, who's really, really good as well. The supporting cast is good too, but she stands out. And so she really risks her position. She's told to just butt out, but she risks her position by getting together with a couple other older ladies in town, and they keep investigating this. Who could be doing this? And it sounds like a whodunit. It's really not, because they let you know whodunit early on,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes more of a why done it,
mm-hmm.
and a can we prove it type of thing. And it's light and it's obvious and it's entertaining enough, but without this cast, especially Jesse Buckley as Rose and Olivia Colman as Edith, it would just fall apart. But mm-hmm. they're just fun to watch.
They are fun to watch.
They're fun to watch, and they're fun
just
to...
Just the trailers
yeah,
fun to watch.
And they're fun to watch together. The writer is Johnny Sweet, and it's his first film screenplay. A lot of TV, and it shows. It really does show. And the director is Thea Sharrock, who did my one and only Ivan. Remember that with mm-hmm. Bryan Cranston
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and called Me Before You. So it's just very light and very obvious and seems like a perfect vehicle to stream at home. But it's in the theaters. And if you like that sort of thing, British humor, very cheeky. You're not going to be doubled over laughing, but it's amusing. And again, just to see some great actors at work, you can check it out. And that's about what it delivers. It really doesn't seem to be aiming for that much more, although it tries to balance the humor with
a little social commentary.
With a little bit of social commentary, but still they keep it very light. There are issues at work here like a religious oppression, like a equality for women, mm-hmm. things like that. But they just kind of touch on it. Let's just get into that a little bit and just keep it light. Keep it light and obvious. And that's what it does. And it's amusing enough with some great performances. Wicked Little Letters is in the theaters now. Well, let's move to a documentary in theaters, a special tribute documentary honoring Gene Wilder's life and career. It's called Remembering Gene Wilder.
We are the music makers. And we are the dreamers of dreams.
Gene was able to do things in comedy that are dangerous to do.
Darling,
would you have to?
Richard Pryor was my teacher.
What are you doing?
I'm good, bad.
My dad knew undeniably there was a magic between them.
It's all right.
They fueled each other, and their improvs made them both better.
He was just a different kind of person than I'd ever met.
To have found someone at this stage of my life, I was in love.
But I knew then that something was very wrong.
Alzheimer's disease, dementia.
When I'd see him slip away further from me, that was the hardest part.
He embodied these characters, and we felt their humanity.
You'll never find another Gene Wilder. He was amazing.
I didn't think Jerry Silberman had the right ring to it. I wanted to be Wilder.
I'll do it!
Well, just last week we had that documentary, the two-part documentary about Steve Martin. Here another beloved comedian, and this is full of love for his career and honoring his career.
On the one hand, it's pretty traditionally crafted. It doesn't break any new ground cinematically. But on the other hand, I think it's easy to have forgotten, like, what a tremendous talent Gene Wilder was.
I think, surely.
You remember the hair, of course. But this one, it does a great job, I think, of kind of zeroing in on moments in his films. Maybe not the ones you expect. Maybe not like the big standout memorable scenes from Young Frankenstein or from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, but moments where he makes a fascinating choice as a performer that you might have missed the first time. Mm-hmm. And it just does a really lovely job. It's an incredibly loving film. This is clearly a movie by a director who has a tremendous fondness for his subject. And as does everybody that he talks to. You hear from Mel Brooks, obviously.
Obviously.
But also Carol Kane and Alan Alda. And you hear from Richard Pryor's daughter, which she has some pretty fascinating, very kind things to say as well. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really affectionate and effective look back on the part of his career that maybe you recall, and then, you know, later in his life that probably you don't recall.
Well, the director is Ron Frank. And he's able to utilize the autobiography that Gene Wilder, the audiobook that he narrated. So you've got a lot of audio of Gene talking about his own life.
Yes, which is maybe the smartest thing he did because, you know, as you hear Carol Kane or you hear Mel Brooks talk about this incredible humanity that he brought, you actually get to hear it. You get to hear it in his own voice, mm-hmm. his humility and his comic timing. It's really a charming and touching way for them to bring him into the film.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Unlike, well, obviously because he's passed away, you know, unlike someone like Steve Martin, who is still very much in the public eye, mm-hmm. Gene Wilder has been gone now a few years, and so sometimes it gets lost. Some of those get lost,
right.
And maybe people that don't realize can go back and look up some of these movies. We did, we just watched, we dug up Blazing Saddles not just a few weeks ago, right, to watch, because you had not seen it.
I had not, or if I had, it was on TV when I was a little kid, because my twin sister remembers it well.
Okay.
But I have no recollection of having seen it.
Yeah.
And it is true that the thing I came away with most from watching Blazing Saddles was what a really good actor mm-hmm. he was.
Yeah.
He just owns that role. He's very subtle. His comic timing is perfect. Nothing is overdone. It's great.
Plus, and nothing against Timothée Chalamet, but he's Willy Wonka as far as I'm concerned. I mean, he owns that.
Yeah, he really does, because he is somehow both completely insane and truly deeply human. He's scary and not all at one time. Yeah, he was great in that movie.
Exactly right. And that is out in theaters now called Remembering Gene Wilder. Got another documentary next, and this is in select theaters this weekend. Hopefully it'll come to streaming soon. Ryuichi Sakamoto's Last Performance, a concert film featuring just him and his piano playing for the last time before passing away. It's called Ryuichi Sakamoto Opus.
This is filmed in just beautiful black and white by his son.
Yes, his son is the director, Neo Sora. And if you don't know Sakamoto, longtime composer and actor, he won his Oscar for the soundtrack for The Last Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
He also did a very memorable soundtrack to Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had a part in that as well. But a long, long career of composing, got tons of Grammys and BAFTAs and just awards and awards and awards. But he had been fighting cancer for several years until right around the time of this movie, he learned that he really had just weeks to live. So his son filmed this final performance, and it's just beautiful and heart-wrenching, and it's in gorgeous black and white, and really the music fills in the colors, all the colors that you need. And, you know, Soro's camera is obviously, it's loving because it's his father, right. But it's either static and just lets you appreciate the moment just sitting there, or it's very slowly moving and elegant and pouring over the hands as they work and the bowed head. He frequently bows his head. I mean, it's just such a graceful, loving performance. And it brought to mind immediately for me that scene in Walk the Line early on where Joaquin Phoenix is Johnny Cash. He goes to that audition with Sun Records, and he's mm-hmm. failing because he's just playing the same old songs. And, you know, the Sun Records owner, Sam Phillips, says, if you were dying in a ditch and you had one song to tell God what you felt about your time on earth, what would you play? And then, of course, in the movie, he plays that he wrote Folsom Prison Blues, and mm-hmm. it goes on. That's what I got the feeling here was. This was a performance for the heavens, as he knows he's leaving this earth in weeks. And when you come to it, especially with that sort of perspective, it's so moving.
It is.
It is so moving and so beautiful. And it's something, though, that you have to see in a theater setting. I can't imagine seeing this streaming. I mean,
because you would be so tempted to just not pay attention.
Yeah.
The seduction of the theater, the quiet, the darkness of the theater,
yep.
it does benefit tremendously.
Yeah, even though I did say it come to streaming when I talked about it, but that's for a wider release. But then come to think of it, no, it should be seen, if possible, if at all possible, on a big screen, in a theater setting, with complete silence.
Right.
To just give it the respect that it deserves. And if you do that, I think it will move you. I really do. I think it will move you profoundly. And it's an hour and 43 minutes, and it's just a performance. He's doing compositions of his own from throughout his career, and it's just a really moving, moving piece of music and a piece of film. It's called Ryuichi Sakamoto Opus, and it is in select theaters now. Let's go back to horror for a Shudder film. A young woman inherits a rundown pub and discovers a dark secret within its basement. Baghead, a shape-shifting creature that will let you speak to lost loved ones, but not without consequence. There's always consequence. It's called Baghead.
What is she?
She has the power to bring back the dead.
I want to see her.
Money's really no object.
I want to talk to my wife.
She only gives you 2 minutes.
Sarah.
After that, she's in control.
We are not safe here. How do I control her?
This isn't something you can control.
I'm going to kill you.
You can't kill her. You cannot let her out of the basement.
This movie is going to remind you of a handful of other movies.
Yeah.
The one I think that it probably suffers the most by comparison to is Talk to Me.
Right.
Right.
That was the first one that came to my mind.
You've got 2 minutes, and the dead will talk to you, and it's a big problem if you talk longer than 2 minutes.
Yep.
You know, and that's not the only one, honestly, that it's going to remind you of, and it doesn't really live up to any of the films. It's not that it's a terrible movie, and it does have a couple of decent performances, but there are a handful of real problems with it. One is that characters just make dumb decisions one after another after another. And then the other thing that I got to be honest just kills it are the tremendously weak digital effects, embarrassingly weak digital effects, especially the fire effects. And I get it. You know, if you don't have a lot of money, then please don't be setting your actors on fire. I 100% am with you on that. But maybe you should have chosen a different way because your digital fire looks terrible. And there, it's a movie that uses a lot of digital effects to get its scares across and doesn't invest in them. And it really takes you out of it. I wanted to like it. I thought that it was maybe an interesting premise. And Peter Mullen starts things off as the pub owner who keeps this baghead down its basement. And the other thing I think is that it just wastes a lot of opportunity. It brings up a lot of different possible avenues to make it more interesting and then ignores them and goes back to what is the most obvious and lazy in terms of storytelling.
This is director Alberto Corridor, and he's expanding his short film. I did a 15-minute Baghead short film from about 6 years ago. So I have the team of three writers to expand that to a feature length. But yeah, it reminded me right off the top of Talk to Me, mm-hmm. which is a vastly superior film.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there are some, it's an still an interesting premise mm-hmm. that could have possibilities there. But mixed results, for sure. And that is on Shudder now, and it's called Baghead. A thriller next in theaters. It follows Jules, who is targeted in a horrific homophobic attack, destroying his life and career. Sometime after that event, he encounters Preston, one of his attackers, in a gay sauna, and he wants revenge. This is called Femme.
Commoner. This is what you get off of.
Maybe.
On your front.
You keep this out of your life completely separate.
I'm a private person.
Get that. I'm the same.
Are you now?
Yeah.
This is writers and directors Sam H. Freeman and Eng Chu Ping. And it stars George Mackay, an actor mm-hmm. we always like. And this was reviewed for us at MadWolf.com by Matt Wiener, and he loved it.
Yeah, he really did. It's a noir. It's a twisty, sort of Nicholas Winding Refn again, colored kind of a noir. It's very edgy. It's very slickly put together. And I think what is even more impressive, what he was more impressed by, was how both of these actors, Nathan Stewart Jarrett and also Mackay, they managed to sort of round out the character. They're not one-dimensional. They find humanity in both of the characters, mm-hmm. even the homophobe, yeah. right? And that makes the tension much more palpable, because if everybody's one-dimensional, then you're not invested and you're not worried that something bad is going to happen. And so it's just a taut, old school thriller.
Yeah, and I like that Matt, in his written review, he said it's tempting just to call it, a noir thriller with a twist, but that's even selling it short.
Right.
What it's able to do. So a good bit of storytelling and acting in this one, and it is in the theaters now and definitely worth checking out. And it is and check out Matt's full review at madwolf.com. It's called Femme. And one more in theaters, a musical romance. Serious musician Doom and free-spirited circus kid Glitter begin a summer romance, but their relationship is tested as they try to make it in the music business. It's called Glitter and Doom.
I think I'm finally falling, and it scares me. Sorry.
Your gig is in a week.
You're not even going to be here for, so why do you care?
One day I'll change.
Is it possible you might say something?
It's a lot to take in.
You'll be the first one that I call.
It can be a lot to take in.
I've been running long before I learned to crawl.
I have crawled inside you, and I will not let go.
I went to the doctor, I went to the mountains, I looked to the children, I drank from the fountains. The less I seek my source for some definitive, closer I am the fire, yeah.
Real world's calling. Do we have to answer?
Well, this is based around the music of the Indigo Girls.
It is.
So right away, if you only know Closer to Fine, their big hit, you're going to hear that and a lot more from the Indigo Girls.
And
well, actually not from them,
right.
but it's their music.
Right, and kind of the way that Mamma Mia used a bunch of ABBA songs
right.
to string together a plot. That is what this film does with Indigo Girls songs. Rachel Willis reviewed this one for us at madwolf.com. And the thing about it is what they do with the songs is clever and fun. And the problem is that the movie seems like a lot of filler around some good musical numbers. And that's unfortunate. The two leads do a lovely job. It gives you the whole sense of, you know, opposites attract.
Yeah. Glitter is Alex Diaz. Doom is Alan Camish. And you also have, well, the Indigo Girls, Amy Ray and Emily Sawyers, they show up. You'll also recognize Tig Notaro. Kate Pearson from the B-52s are in there. Also Ming-Na Wen and Missy Pyle. So you'll know some cast members.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's not even that the performances are bad either. They are not. The problem is, I suppose, the writing, the narrative around the songs just does. It just feels like filler. It's not that it's a bad film. It's a nice movie. I think that if you like the songs, you're going to enjoy it. It just felt like it, storytelling-wise, should have been more.
Yeah, director Tom Gustafson. The writer is Corey Kruckenberg. Hope I pronounced that right. And check out Rachel's full review at madwolf.com, and that is called Glitter and Doom, and it's out in theaters now. Okay, we missed him last week, but he's back. Let's check in with the Schlocketeer.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Checking back in the lobby, Daniel Baldwin, a.k.a. the Schlocketeer, with some new studio news and headlines. What's shaking?
Blumhouse's Night Swim and Lisa Frankenstein are both now available to stream on Peacock. Catch up on some horror that way.
Yeah.
Pedro Almodovar's Western short, Strange Way of Life, will be available on Netflix starting April 12th.
Loved it.
And the animated film Migration will hit Peacock on April 19th. Late Night with the Devil will also be hitting Shudder on April 19th. So if you haven't been able to catch it in theaters, you'll be able to see it soon.
That's a fun one.
And then the popular rom-com Anyone But You will be streaming on Netflix starting April 23rd. Then skipping ahead to May, Saban Films will release Jean-Claude Van Damme's latest film, Darkness of Man, on May 21st. I would assume that's VOD, since I believe that's a Tuesday.
Yeah, probably.
And then ISC will release the slasher film In a Violent Nature in theaters on May 31st. On the same day, Shout Studios will release their western, The Dead Don't Hurt, which is directed by Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, okay. Has he directed before?
One time. It was a drama called Falling a few years ago.
Okay.
And then Sony has locked in a June 7th theatrical release for Bad Boys Ride or Die. Of course, the first trailer's out now. And I have to wonder if they're wishing they'd save the Bad Boys for Life title for the fourth film instead of the third one back in 2020.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Disney and Searchlight will release Yorgos Lanthimos' star-studded anthology film Kinds of Kindness in theaters on June 21st.
You know what? I did not realize that was an anthology. So that's exciting.
Yeah, I think it has a small cast, and they all play different characters in each short.
Cool.
And then he's shooting another film this summer with Emma Stone, and she's in Kinds of Kindness as well. So he's on a roll lately.
Yeah.
And then Sony is releasing the Dakota Johnson and Sean Penn starring drama Daddy-O in theaters on June 28th. And I've got two more for you. Neon has delayed the release of Tillman Singer's Cuckoo. It was originally set for a limited theatrical on May 3rd, but it's now going nationwide on August 9th.
Hmm.
So we got to wait longer, but everyone can see it
when
it arrives.
Yeah.
And more Dan Stevens. And then lastly, Sony has set an October 25th theatrical release for Venom, The Last Dance. Of course, with Tom Hardy back in the titular role. And Chiwetel Ejiofor and Juno Temple are joining the fray this time.
All right.
Hopefully that'll be good.
Yeah, that could be a good thing. All right, you can always catch up on the latest with Daniel. Find him on the socials at The Schlocketeer. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
Looking ahead to next week, one big one I'm almost afraid to watch.
I know.
To be honest with you, and we see it Monday. Civil War, we'll talk about that next week.
Also, Invader.
One called, new Nicolas Cage, right? Arcadian is next week.
Sting, saw that one already, like it, fun.
One called Damaged.
And Leroy, Texas.
Okay, that's next week, though. What about this week? Monkey Man, The First Omen, Wicked Little Letters, and more? Let's talk. We can always keep the conversation going. On the socials, you can find us Mad Wolf Columbus on Facebook, on Threads, and also on Instagram. And on the main website at madwolf.com, where you can find all the written reviews. Another fun stuff. So, we always like you to keep in touch. We hope you will. We'll get together, same time, talk about the new movies again next week. But until then, be well. And she is Hope Madden.
He's George Wolf.
And this is the Screening Room Podcast. And happy birthday, Mom.
I do wish we could chat longer, but I'm having an old friend for dinner. goodbye.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.